This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Greetings, constant listeners. It's Jen 2, the Rage Adams. What you're about to hear is a clip from our Patreon exclusive series, Randall, Dan, and Mel's Halloween Hell 2022. All three losers watched a horror movie every day in October, and now they're breaking down the highs and lows of their cinematic journeys. Together, they debate the month's newest horror releases, Hellraiser, Smile, VHS 99, Halloween Ends, and discuss what's not being said about the burgeoning Terrifier franchise. They also enjoy extended riffs on the simple pleasures of Chucky, the bizarre eroticism of Tobe Hooper's Life Force, and the disparate appeals of Cronenberg's David and Brandon. All in all, the trio discusses roughly 60 to 70 horror movies, spanning a myriad of decades, styles, tones, and kill counts. How do you hear the full thing? Get it now by subscribing through the link in the description of this episode, or you can visit www.patreon.com/thebarons. Hope to see you there over long days and pleasant nights.
Okay, let's move on to our superlatives. We're going to start with our top five movies, and let's rank them. Dan, are you ready? Can you rank your top five?
Oh, yeah. I've got them listed out right here. So my top five, my favorite one I actually haven't even talked about yet. It was Duel by Steven Spielberg, which...
Was that his first movie?
Very first movie, yeah.
I've never seen it.
Was Sugarland Express? No, Duel was the first one. It was a TV movie. Should I say anything about them or just share the list?
Yeah, talk about them. I mean, let's try not to spoil, but yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I think Hitcher was described.
I was just going to say this. I was just.
Did you describe it?
No, it was someone else. So Duel with a person.
So this is like the Hitcher but with a truck. But honestly, it is. The similarities go beyond just the Southwestern setting and the sort of call to manliness or whatever.
There is a person driving the truck, though, right? Like, it's implied.
You see their arms and their legs, you never see their face, though. But it's similar to The Hitcher, because I remember you described The Hitcher as being like a movie where the villain is trying to train the hero to be in a horror movie. It's almost this like call to action, and Duel is a very similar thing. And it's Spielberg, right? It's young Spielberg, so it just has a ton of artistry in it. Like genuinely adrenaline-seeking. And some of the sequences are also weird. Like there's a scene where the truck driver's chasing the man through like a roadside reptile stand, like a lady selling snakes, and so stuff keeps crashing and there's like serpents going everywhere. I mean, it feels weirder than most Spielberg movies do. I was completely blown away by it. I thought it was gonna feel dated. It did not at all. It's still like a genuinely lean and mean thriller. So that Duel is my favorite, the most affecting. Next was Hell House LLC.
It's great.
I won't spoil too much about that movie because I think the less you know about it, the better. I had heard that movie hyped by Mike Rothman and others, and it definitely lived up to that. Also, it's really fun because you get to the main plot is them putting together a haunted house, which I thought was fun to watch just from like a hangout perspective. I mean, it's very scary and everything too, but it's a genuinely interesting non-horror story. Killing of a Sacred Deer, which we talked about a little bit, but it's funny because people keep saying, oh, well, I'll never watch that movie again. It was really good. I think I actually will, because I was a little bit lost in what they were saying with the ending, but I feel like maybe if I rewatch it, there's some more thematic meat there that I'm getting. And also having just had a kid, there's something very uncomfortable about watching the central dilemma of that movie. And
doesn't it open with like surgery?
It does.
Open heart. Yeah.
I remember, I was a little late to that movie and I walked in like as that was happening. I was like, oh, we're right in it, aren't we?
Okay. Yeah, no, it goes for the throat pretty right away. But it's funny because the acting purposely, I think, in the beginning is very almost like Stepford Wives-ish, like very kind of happy and fake. And I think there's a specific reason for that. As this sort of invasive force comes into their lives, the acting becomes a lot more raw and real, and you find out some secrets of the main character's past. Once again, another movie that lived up to the hype. And even though it's not a very pleasant movie to watch, I do keep thinking about it, which leads me to believe I might watch it again. And then, the two VHS movies, 94, I think, is the stronger of the two just in terms of the segments. But 99 is right after that for the aesthetic reasons I already mentioned. I give all those 4.5. So that I think those were the only ones I gave 4.5. So it was very clear what my top five were. The star ratings speak for itself.
Nice. Were there any movies that you gave high star ratings to that you feel like over time you would give it less?
Oh, less. I was going to say nope. Not for less necessarily. I still don't really know how I quite feel about it, but I always think, okay, the movie doesn't leave my head and I'm still sorting it out in my brain, like what it means, why I'm drawn to it, what it was saying, etc. That's usually a good sign to me, and the fact that I want to revisit it. Let me pull up my list real quick.
Well, why don't you think about it? We can talk about it in a little bit. Mel, top five.
Top five. All right. I'll try and rank them, but they're so tonally different from each other that it's a little tough. I do think that coming in first, I think Kill List has to do it, which is a surprise to me. I loved Kill List so much. Now that we've established that I'm a huge acting snob, I think it should come as no surprise that some of my favorite horror movies in particular are ones where they let the actors improvise the majority of the dialogue, and that is the case for this film.
Who are the leads? It's like Michael Smiley.
He's the one I remember the most.
He's fantastic.
He's so fucking good. It just feels so real, and when you can do that and then also inject unreality, like, there's nothing better for me. That is the best that horror can get, is completely immersed in a very consistent and recognizable reality. Now let's fuck it up and have those characters remain as true to life as they have been, but something incredibly bizarre is going on. And it sounds simple, like a simple equation, but it doesn't get pulled off with aplomb too often. And I know that the ending frustrates some people in that it seems abstract and a little out of nowhere, but I think it is seeded throughout the whole film. Like, it shouldn't be the surprise by the time it happens. Like, we have sort of seen this coming through many little clues throughout the way that are very explicit, and B, it just makes total sense. It's how, you know, that quote about good writing or a good ending should be surprising yet inevitable, and I feel like that is very true of this film. And it just brought me back to the whole exercise. Again, that was the week I was in a slump, so that could have something to do with the high rating, but it just kind of invigorated me and reanimated me back into...
It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
And I believe that's Ben Wheatley.
I know nothing about it.
It's a Ben Wheatley movie, and I'm kind of hot or cold on him, but that one I remember being deeply struck by when I watched it. I haven't revisited it in probably about 10 years, though, so...
It was great. Second... Lair of the White Worm, we've already talked about it. It's so tonally different from Kill List. It's funny, it's sexy. Amanda Donahoe is owning it. It's got a lot of snake iconography, and I love snakes, and I love how we connect snakes and worms to various, like, phallic, but just generally sexual imagery. And in fact, they're so interesting because they are both associated with, like, the sexy feminine and the sexy masculine. I just love snakes, so I mean, sure, that's up there. Possessor, which is a surprise to me that it's up there, because when I saw it, I was kind of like, I'm not sure I dig this that much. And then over time, I think I came to really, really admire just how consistent and laborious of a vision it was. Like, it is just so assured in itself and, like, committed to this world that it has built so painstakingly, that I just have to recognize that it is one of the best films on this list, like, whether or not I was, like, so enthralled during its runtime. I admire it so much. And
That's how I felt. It was definitely a movie I admired but didn't particularly enjoy. I found it very sterile at times, but I think that's, like, there's such a coldness to it that I think is intentional.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's on purpose. And I feel like it's so smart, especially when your dad is David Cronenberg, like, and you are also going to be doing body horror. Like, again, I don't know if this is intentional on Brandon's part, but like, to then kind of be like, I'm going to do body horror, but it is going to be shocking in a different way from my father's work.
Yeah, it definitely didn't feel like Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Or like a David Cronenberg, yeah.
Life Force, which I feel like I'm going like, serious, fun. And like, Life Force is so fun.
And that's Toby Hooper, right?
It's Toby Hooper, who I'm like, is Toby Hooper my favorite director? Like, but Life Force was such a fucking treat. It came in late in the game. It is also just off the walls horny in ways that throw gender and other shit out the window. The effects are incredible. I have never seen a movie successfully stuff so much into itself as this one does, because if you like zombies, if you like aliens, if you like vampires, if you like The Thing, if you like special effects that look really gnarly and wet, if you like a naked woman walking around for the whole time, if you like Patrick Stewart being possessed by the naked woman, like playing an insane asylum proprietor, and it
you're
all
speaking my language.
It all, and I it all makes sense. Like, it's actually incredible. Like, I've never seen a movie like this before in my life, and cannot recommend it highly enough.
I remember when my dad showed me Life Force. I was probably middle school or something, and before he turned on, he was like, serious. He's like, look, there's a woman like walking around naked the whole time. All right, just like almost like just take it easy, okay? Like,
take it easy. Don't start jerking off during the movie.
I also love Life Force too, but I always remember him just being like, "Look, I'm gonna show you this to you. Just like be cool about it. All right,
be cool." So, that's so
yeah,
funny.
It's a great movie.